Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Well, everybody, welcome to another installment of internationally beloved podcast In Bed with Nick and Megan. And by internationally beloved, I mean Nick and I like it. This week, very, very extra super duper special guest stars because, and historic, a historic occasion is being marked. This is the actual first time that we've had another couple, a married couple,
a proper double date,
a romantic partnership with us. In our virtual bed today. So we're very excited. Mary Steenburgen and Ted Danson.
Woo!
And you guys, I'm not going to list their credits because if you don't know who they are, then you also don't know what a podcast is and you're not going to be hearing this, so it's not a problem. All right. Got that out of the way. Hi, guys. How fun.
Hi.
We've always threatened to do this. We've always threatened to get together and go out and have a meal or a drink or something. And here we are for the first time doing it on and recording it. It's a little strange.
Our double date, yeah.
It's like what Pixar would have us do for our first double date.
So I don't want to play favorites, but I do feel like there aren't very many celebrity couples, really, when you stop and think about it, but there aren't any better ones than us. There aren't any cuter celebrity couples than you guys or us.
So did we just alienate everyone who hates celebrities and then the celebrities that are couples?
Yeah.
So there's no one left.
No.
There's no one left.
So this is now a private conversation.
Yeah, I don't think we don't normally refer to ourselves as a celebrity couple, but under the circumstances, I mean, it has to be pointed out. So, you guys, what in the world? How are you doing?
We're actually doing really well. We were doing amazing until about an hour before this podcast when we started like uncontrollably fighting with each other.
Oh no.
fear kicked in.
And it really wasn't fear of talking to you guys. It was much more fear of the fact that we have a really crappy old computer and we are extremely challenged as far as, you know, any sort of electronical devices. And so I think both of us got like wigged out about it. And then we just started kind of carping at each other. And before that, we've had actually quite a few weeks of kind of bliss, but
you will be associated forever with our first fight in the last 3 weeks.
All right. We're happy to be a part of anything concerning you guys.
Yeah. We simply incite passion in your household.
Right. There you go.
There it is.
There you go.
Hi guys. It is nice to see you. Wow.
Yeah. So is that your office I'm seeing there?
No, we don't have an office because what would you put in an office? Like a computer or something?
Oh, right. Yeah,
which we don't have an office either. Done.
Yeah.
This is our kitchen. And if we were to turn the iPad around, you would see that we're in our kitchen and there's a jigsaw puzzle on the table.
We've got one right here too. That's so funny.
I found 4 pieces.
That's a good day.
It's one of the New Yorker cover jigsaw puzzles. They're very challenging. And but our friend Will Forte got us kind of hooked back into jigsaw puzzles. So So there it is. The whole outside, the rim edges are all done.
Yeah.
But nothing on the inside is done, which is kind of like us. It's like, let's do the easy part.
Yeah.
And someday we'll fill in the rest.
We're constantly, we almost always have a puzzle going. Right now we've got two going. There's this great puzzle company called Liberty Puzzles. Have we ever... No, we probably haven't talked to you about this.
I think I saw some of those. I think we have one of those up in Martha's Vineyard. We had a Liberty puzzle. Those are cool.
The wooden ones?
Yes.
Yeah, they're so pretty. And we actually went on their website yesterday to thinking we might get more, but they're not delivering right now because we're all under quarantine, and they're in Colorado, which is now under quarantine.
Where did you grow up, Megan?
Oklahoma City.
Aha. I say aha because I've never been to Oklahoma.
Oh, I wouldn't rush out, but I mean, nice people there.
And then you lived there until when? I'm going to take over this interview.
Wait a second.
and I don't want to, I'm not Oklahoma City bashing. I'm just saying like, it's not like a super popular vacation destination or not that I'm aware of anyway.
Do you still have family there?
No. Okay. Yes. Let me revise that. My uncle and some cousins are still there, and a bunch of friends who are like family because I've a lot of friends I've known since first grade. So they're there. And then Nick's from a small town you probably know that, outside of Chicago, called Minooka. And he's got a gigantic family. But that's a pretty small, it's getting bigger, but it's a pretty small, like, agriculturally based town.
Is that related in any way to the fact that Minooka honey is called Minooka honey?
Just no, it's a different spelling. But both are pollen based communities.
Well, where are you guys from?
Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh. North.
And I'm from North Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, my gosh. This is like a first double date.
That's very charismatic.
So, at some point, we need to ask each other how we met our respective partners. We'll save that for later in the podcast.
Anytime.
Ted, by the way, has one of the most exotic upbringings of anybody I know.
In Flagstaff?
Yeah, it was exotic, I guess, because my father was an archaeologist and a director of a museum in Flagstaff, and the museum had been created to not only be a natural history museum, but also to support the arts, crafts, and the culture of the Hopi, Navajo, Zuni, Pueblo Indians in that Four Corners area. So a lot of the people who worked there were Hopi or Navajo, and it was outside of town. So my only friends were my Hopi Navajo friends and my rancher's sons and daughters' friends. So it was literally jump on horses and ride this way or that way or do whatever, you know.
Bareback.
Yeah, out the door at 8, you know, back before dark kind of upbringing. And it was pretty amazing. The Hopi live on these three mesas where they've lived forever, you know, and never went to war with the United States. So they're living in the same, so they never got moved. So they're living in the same houses and plazas that they have for the last 800-900 years. So it was pretty
God,
amazing.
God, that sounds like a dream.
Yeah, it really was. It was like, we heard one of your podcast talking about Catholic, you, Nick, your Catholic kind of church. So I would go to an Episcopalian church on Sunday with my mother and family and all of that. But then we'd be playing on another weekend, we'd be playing around these plazas on the Hopi villages that had the kachinas dancing and praying to their gods, you know, as they had forever. And it all felt the same to me, all felt very equal. I was very lucky to have that kind of different cultures right in my face growing up.
Oh, Oh, man, that is so cool.
That's a pretty blasphemous point of view, Ted.
Oh, man, we just took a drive, a little road trip back in December and January, and we went through, it was all Southwest, basically. I mean, our turnaround point was Oklahoma City, but we went through Arizona, New Mexico, and came back via Marfa, Texas. It was so lovely.
Were you in a van or just a car kind of thing?
We tried to do, a friend of ours has like a fitted out Sprinter van, you know, that you can kind of half camp in.
Yeah, it's a Mercedes camper.
It's Don't worry, really that's what I nice. Pictured. Yeah,
but we couldn't find one at the time, and so we just got like a big SUV, like a Tahoe, and we had our three dogs with us. And in fact, I went to a very friendly veterinarian's office in Flagstaff.
Oh wow!
They took very good care of me.
That's Mary's dream, really, is to take road trips.
I love road trips.
Yeah, we do too. We had so much fun.
I think it's a wonderful free roaming sensibility. Perhaps after our jobs that require so much surgical focus and scheduling and like meticulous focusing of our energies to then hit the open road is a wonderful getaway.
The reason I asked about your background there is because, Mary, I've heard you're such a great interior designer. And I keep trying to finagle an invite over to your house so I can check it out.
Well, you will have one as soon as medically possible.
Right. As soon as we're allowed.
I've seen your house and I loved it. It's definitely the house of artists and people who have such a beautiful and unique eye, and I was enchanted by it. I've thought about it actually quite a bit. And since being there, it's really special. And I love houses that when you go to their house, you know who they are a little bit better. And it's strange to me when you go to a house and you leave and you don't know anything more about those people than you did before you went there.
Yeah. So, I agree. Is it something you ever considered doing for a living?
No. I was part owner of a store and a design business for years, and it's a wonderful store that is now, he was my former partner's store. It's called Rooms and Gardens, and he does a beautiful job. It's on Montana Avenue in LA. But no, it's for me, it's just seeing things I love. I have really, honestly, no real expertise. It's just falling in love with little things. And I grew up in a house about the size of our kitchen, and we were actually very happy there. There were some things that were hard about it, but I don't associate having a big space with happiness. So, I love our house. It's cozy.
That's so nice.
Me too. I have to, let me just jump in on Mary, because before music came along for Mary, color, I have to say, if you were looking at paintings or magazines that had, you know, color, you would stay up. It would stimulate
you're
you to the point
sound
where
even weirder than I
am. No, it's like Mary will find something, and then a year later, whether it's a lamp or something like that, and then a year later say, you know, oh, this will go perfectly with this. You remember colors. I don't remember colors.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah, that's exactly what Megan does as well. And it's uncanny. That's a great example. Like, will be across the country and she'll see a piece of art and say, oh, finally, this has that fuchsia that the cushions on our couch have.
Although,
and she'll stand back and like squint one eye.
Yeah, although I feel like it's important to say that I love art and we have some nice pieces, but I've always just bought what I like. And I also don't believe in, I believe in designing the room around the art, not designing the art, not getting art to match a room. I don't right. believe in that. I think Same. That's cheating. Yeah.
Same. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. That's so nice. I wanted to, for a while when I wasn't getting work back in the 80s, I considered trying to enroll in UCLA for interior design. I thought it would be, that's definitely what I would have done or might still do. I don't know.
We have a daughter that's amazing at it. And she's an interior designer, so I can live vicariously through her projects. But I don't know. I feel like I love helping friends that ask me to help them with it. And I love just, you know, kind of we change our house around now and then a little bit and add and subtract. So that's enough for me. Also, I have that disease that you have when you're an actor and you're used to things going up overnight, you know, because we're so used to sets that, you know, you walk onto the set and here's your house, here's your character's house. And it was built in 5 days, you know, and it's not really the way the rest of the world works. And of course they're not really built to withstand anything. But
so naturally we watch HGTV nonstop.
We do watch a lot of
where
HGTV.
Kitchens cost $15,000 and go up in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I want to hear, Ted, we're going to get to all the fascinating things about you shortly, but Mary, talk about your new career in music. This is so fascinating.
Yeah, I guess it's a career. I do and don't think of it that way. But what happened to me was that April 17th, 2007, I had a minor surgery on my right arm, and it wasn't a big deal. But I did have to go under general anesthetic, and I came out from under the surgery and I felt very strange, but I didn't worry about that because I'd just gone under general anesthetic. So I figured in a day or so I'll feel normal. But I kept not feeling like myself. And the best way I can describe it is that you have an experience your whole life of how the inside of your mind sounds, you know, your thoughts, you know, the whether or not you sometimes let music in. All of a sudden mine had music at the forefront of it all day, all night, and every single thing that anyone said turned into music. And melodies would go past, and if I would see a street sign, the street sign became musical rather than just being a spoken thing or a reading thing. It was a musical thing. And it in the beginning was sort of tumultuous and hard and scary, and I felt like something I wasn't happy about it. And then after a couple of months of not sleeping very well, I just looked at myself in the mirror one day and said, this isn't going to change. You're going to have to start dealing with it. And the way to deal with it is to probably study music. And so having never had any ambition at all, as a musician or a songwriter, I began now realizing it was the only thing I could do with this. And so I started studying first songwriting structure, because I didn't really know a verse from a chorus. I didn't even know what a lot of the musical terms meant. And then I had taken piano as a kid, but I had not been very diligent about practicing, and I had forgotten how to read music, I certainly didn't know how to play music. But I started trying to sing for another musician what I heard in my head. And a guy named Mike Benjamin on Martha's Vineyard, that's a very talented singer and musician. And so together we kind of laboriously put together this collection of songs that I would kind of fashion out of what I heard in my head. And then I sent those, with him singing and him playing, I sent those to a music lawyer that a friend of mine knew of, and I put someone else's name, my mother's name, on there. And because I didn't want him to work with me if he didn't like the material, just to be nice, you know, so he called my manager and said, "No, I do. I want to work with that kid that you sent me the music." And my manager goes, "Yeah, kid's not going to quite describe her, but I'll send her in to me." I went in, and he was like, "Mary Steenburgen." And I'm like, "Yep, that's me. That's my music." And so we've been working together. Yeah. And so I started writing first by myself, and then I eventually started writing for Universal Music Publishing Group, and they encouraged me to go to Nashville. And it was really in Nashville that I learned to write. That's where everything started to make sense to me. And it was scary and hard. And I was always you have to be really humble when you have one career, but you start a whole other thing, you know, at the age that I am. I still write with a lot of Nashville people. We write for mostly what I've been doing lately is doing the music for an animated film, doing the songs for an animated film. But this past year I wrote with Caitlin Smith and Kate York, who are two great Nashville writers. We wrote the end credit. Well, it's like the end song that Jesse Buckley performs in Wild Rose, in the movie Wild Rose. That song we were honored to tie with Elton John and Bernie Taupin for the Critics' Choice Award for Best Song.
Wow.
It's been an interesting journey. The biggest part of it being saying yes and learning to say yes to something, and also not letting fear and or embarrassment or shyness, in my case, or a lot of other things stop you from doing it. And that's been important to me, because there have been many times that that I could have just said, "This is ridiculous, and I'm gonna stop," because everybody I know is more talented at this than me. But I've learned a lot, and I've been doing it since 2007. So at this point, I'm proud of to say that I'm a songwriter, and I really, really enjoy it and love it. And it's extremely important and meaningful to me.
Gosh, that is just absolutely fascinating.
That is so inspiring.
It really is. So do you write mostly melodies, or are you able to, you know, write parts for instruments or orchestrate things?
We mostly do, I mostly write songs, so they have lyrics. And I, when we write together, when I write, especially with my Nashville and now more and more also LA collaborators, we don't really differentiate between writing the melodies and writing the lyrics. You just kind of, in my case, I sing what I hear. By the way, rarely are I've recorded myself singing almost none of my music because I write with really incredible people that are usually far more gifted than me as far as a voice. And so, but in the process, this is my fastest instrument to work with is my own voice. I've taught myself enough piano that I'm able to also communicate now with the piano. And then for some weird reason, the first instrument that I started was the accordion. But I don't use it to write. I just use it to play weird French cafe music to amuse myself. But
That's so cool. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I love it. So, I mean, what our listeners are obviously going to be dying to know is what is this minor arm surgery and where can we get it performed on ourselves?
I tried it. Forgot it.
I love
nothing.
It.
Got me nothing.
So your theory is that when you went under anesthesia, that it unlocked some hidden proclivity in your brain that had been buried, or
I don't think it unlocked a talent. I think what it might have done, you know, my grandmother was very musical, so it would make sense that in my genetic makeup there was some little leaning toward music, but it either opened up some little channel to that part of my brain, or it somehow removed, I guess, the impediment to it. I don't really, you know, somehow allowed me to believe, to stop myself from doing it, you know, that I no longer was going to say no to it. I don't know what happened. There's a book by Dr. Oliver Sacks called Musicophilia that's about people who had a previously normal relationship to music, and then because of some disturbance to the brain, and I think some of the examples are struck by lightning or a car accident or even a brain tumor, that the person developed an obsessive relationship to music. So I didn't suddenly become necessarily talented at writing music. I did become obsessed with writing music, and that obsession led me to studying it and saying yes to it. And I'm still learning and will be for the rest of my life how to express myself musically. But the interesting thing is, you know, when you're a kid, everybody says to you, don't say you can't do something, because you can do. You can do whatever you put your mind to. I said that to my kids. Everybody says it to their kids. And then there's some mysterious day where nobody says that to you anymore. Like you're right. Done. You're done. You're cooked, you know? Yeah. And I think I'm not someone who's ever quite believed that that was right. And maybe that was somehow it just removed my, you know, any part of me that was trying to resist it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened to me, but it did. I mean,
it was day specific. It was me being married to someone who was like this on one day. And then the next day she was, or maybe the next week or whatever, when I, you know, noticed somebody different, you know.
Wow.
It really was. I mean, Mary loves to act and will always love to act, but I watch her kind of go to heaven when she's around music. It just lights her up so completely. Yeah, it was different. It was.
Yeah, I get that. I don't get the whole, you know, the mysterious aspect of it. It seems cool and mysterious, but I have a reaction to music that's different from anything else. And that's the time where I feel that I'm really happy and in my element is when I'm playing music, and everything else is fine. But I really, music is my first thing, and it's not something that, you know, anybody necessarily really, not very many people even know that I do it. And, but yeah, well, funny how it works.
We do.
We saw you and Stephanie Hunt do your show, Nancy and Beth, at the Largo.
Most amazing evening.
So now that you've heard my story, you might know why I was, I hope I expressed that I was really obsessed with it, and because it was such a creative, beautiful, unique, utterly original evening of your song and dance. I've never seen anything
like
it.
Your body was like, both of you were like, your body had the music in it. It was just truly amazing.
Thank you. That aspect of it has been so fun because, you know, I get to choreograph, and I started as a dancer, and I was in a ballet company for years in high school, junior high and high school. And then, you know, I've just danced a little bit like in musicals, but to be able to go back to that and especially to be able to choreograph is so fun, and to make something just make the thing that we want to do exactly what we want to do and what we think is interesting or good or funny or whatever, and then have people respond to it has been so meaningful. Because I don't, you know, I think as actors, we don't have autonomy like that in our work. And to be able to create something from the ground up and have people seem to enjoy it has been really great.
I feel like I could also have this kind of relationship with music. We also read that Oliver Sacks book and about the being struck by lightning and whatnot. So Megan and I are working towards, hopefully, I'm hoping my first orgasm will ignite this kind of relationship.
He's been pacing himself.
So
he didn't want to rush into anything.
Fingers crossed.
I've got my fingers crossed.
I have this image of you. I have this image of you in the middle of a storm on the peak of your roof, doing all sorts of terrible things to yourself in the hope of.
Yep. Honey, bring my clarinet.
Well, that is just a really, really, really amazing thing. I want to hear some of your music, which I'm sure I can do if I just go online. And I'm excited about it. That's so cool. I bet everybody after listening to this podcast is going to immediately Google that. And
well, if you watch the movie Wild Rose, Jesse Buckley's amazing in it. And at the very end of the movie, she sings the song that we wrote.
Oh, so cool. Well, that's on my list of the next, you know, in the next week or two, we'll be getting to that. Now, Ted, which uncanny abilities have you cultivated in recent years?
Nothing. You're literally nothing.
You're about due for an act two.
You know what he does well? Looking good.
Nothing. I mean, this particular period in the world, the history of the world where we're all just secluded and you can't go off and act, has revealed to me that I have nothing. Besides acting, nothing.
Do you read?
I do read. I enjoy that. Okay. I can amuse myself, but as far as being productive or creative, it really is acting. I mean, I felt that way when I discovered it, you know, as a 20-year-old. It was like a light bulb went off, and it was like, oh, thank God, there is something for me in this world. And people say, you know, you always get that interview question. So what would you do if you weren't an actor? Well, I am discovering the answer to that, because usually I make some sort of quip about, oh, I'd be a butler. And it turns out that I was right. I'm a good butler during this particular time.
But amen to that.
It's we don't have to get particularly heavy, but it's amazing to strip yourself of all of the trappings that you identify yourself with and that you kind of take for granted and pretend like it's not really you, that I'm way more complicated and enlightened to think that just this one thing, acting, is what I hang my hat on. But boy, I hang my hat on acting. I walk around in this kind of unreal world of people recognizing me and saying, oh, we love you, you make us laugh, or da 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 da. And now all of a sudden, when you take that contact away, I am gobsmacked.
Okay, I'm getting the message. I got it. I need to praise you a
you're
lot ten, more.
You're so great. Have I ever told you, what Cheers has meant to me?
Okay, but now see, what's uncanny about me is I believe you, the three of you just now, and I'm so grateful.
And you feel better?
Yeah, I do feel better.
The good thing is, since if acting is where you're going to hang your hat, without, I haven't looked anything up. That's our practice. We do no research for our podcast.
But I could just,
we bill it as a gimmick, but it's really just because we're lazy.
From Cheers to Becker, there's some Three Men and a Baby movies. You got your Damages, CSI, Thin Red Line,
Fargo,
The Good Place, Fargo.
Thank you.
To name a few.
Jason Schwartzman, what was that show?
Bored to Death.
Bored to Death. That's what
he said. Another series.
Love Bored to Death series.
Yes.
And so thank you. Thank you for The Thin Red Line. I wasn't in it, but I do appreciate
it. He'll take the credit.
Okay. No. So I did the math. And
you were even great not being in that.
That's
how good you are.
Well done, you.
You're just that good.
Since 1982, you've had 11 days off. So if you want to discover your next talent, you're going to have to give yourself a little more time.
Yeah, that's true.
Coming my way.
You're hobbling yourself.
Yeah. So you were saying that, you know, this during this time when we're all sequestered and left to our own devices, this podcast, we're not really supposed to get overly topical about what's going on in that moment in time, because we don't know when the episodes will air. But guess what? We kind of have to, because it's what's for dinner. I'm hoping that something lasting of value will come out of this, whether it's a sense of community or creativity or any number of other good things. What's your feeling on that?
I want to say the answer to that for me also has something to do with what you just said. And that is that we've been together now since 1993. I'm bad at math, but it's like in the 20s, 20 something.
27.
Okay. And during all that time and before that time, Ted puts hours and hours and hours of his time into working very specifically environmentally on making a difference to the world's oceans. So I let you express how you're not good at anything else, but
I would be
remiss if I, who live with him and who actually sees how much time he devotes to this and energy and money and care and thoughtfulness. And he's mostly now for years worked with Oceana, which if people want to read what they've been up to, it's oceana.org. But it's been, you know, because I know a lot of actors who get involved with something for a season or a moment or as long as that cause is in the front of everybody's brain. But he's done this day in and day out, year in, year out, ever since I've known him and before. And one of the things that I think that is happening is that I think all of us are starting to realize and appreciate both the beauty and the fragility of the planet. And people that maybe used to even make fun of him originally when you were doing it, and people, talk radio people would talk about how silly it is. It doesn't all seem so silly anymore. And I just want to say that I've really always admired it, because you don't toot your own horn about it, but you do talk about it. And you've even written a book called Oceana. And that that is one of the main things I adore about him. And so when you talk about how you're not talented at anything other than being a fabulous actor, I have to disagree.
Yes, that's true. And thank you. Thank you for that. And two things. I guess everything I do, you know, acting is about community. It's about relationship. It's about it's about your little troop of players, and you are in community. And now we're not in community. And I think that it's hard to be in community. You can't go up and hug and hang and talk. And, you know, it's much more online and by necessity, and rightfully so, and all of that. So I think that kind of, not just me, but I'm sure the entire world is staggered by not being able to go hug your parents or your children, or your, if you're not living in the same house, all of that stuff. So the community part, I guess, is what I love about acting, what I love about doing television, especially for me, was the repertory's ensemble like nature of most television shows. I love going to work with the same people every day and getting to know them over the years. I cherish that. And to have that taken away momentarily, or whatever this moment is, I think is what kind of staggers my brain sometimes. And then going back to what we hope that we kind of come away with from this, and without getting preachy or anything, it's, you know, I think we can all see how important science is, because when we talk about saving people's lives and respirator, all of that stuff that is going on in hospitals in this desperate way, this life and death way, is science. The machines that are saving us our lives and are helping us breathe are created out of science, and the medicine and the everything that we now are depending on is so clearly science, that I hope that we can, as a world, as a country especially, can bring science back in, not as this, you know, this evil dark thing that is contrary to a religious belief, but it is something that is, you know, that is, it's on the same side of spirituality. It is the same thing. And if, you know, if you can see how clearly the science is helping us live and breathe right this moment, then extend that out to allow science to also say, hey, things have changed on this earth. And you may not like the phrase climate change, but whatever, things have changed. And we are going to need to and get to depend more and more on science. So, you know, I hope we end up coming out of this celebrating and embracing science as a country.
Oh, I love that, Ted.
Amen to that.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, science is about, you know, the betterment of life for everyone in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, and instead of a dark force, it's actually, if you pay attention to it, especially in this moment, it's actually a great source of light. And the more of it we are able to learn, the more enlightened we become. And well, it'll give us the opportunity to have more religious epiphanies.
Yeah.
we can stick around and perform some more ceremonies.
I'd like to just say that that I did in the fifth grade in shop build a little wooden stool that you could step on to reach things higher. And I actually did fall off of it because the legs were kind of round, the bottoms of them, instead of flat. So I fell off it and sprained my ankle. So I have this huge admiration for anyone who can create magic with wood. And I had no idea when I first met you that you are a serious, what would you call it? Woodworker, woodmaker, woodworker.
Yeah, just woodworker.
But not only are you good and have a shop and you create things of beauty that, you know, are desired by many people, but you also know so much about the other people in your field and your craft. I love that we both knew someone who was a boat maker in Martha's Vineyard, and that I started to talk about him, and then you actually told me you spent like 2 weeks with him because you were writing a book about him.
Yeah. Or
part of a book.
Yeah. Nat Benjamin.
He's amazing.
Gannon and Benjamin, yes. Boatyard and Martha's Vineyard. Yeah. He and his partner, Ross Gannon, in my brain, they're legendary. The inception of their boatyard was in the 70s when fiberglass was taking over the world of pleasure boating. And they said, you know what? This just doesn't have the class or the charisma or the integrity that wooden boats have. So let's stick with wooden boats while everybody else is going to these more modern materials. And so in my head, I've cast them as Nat Benjamin is the Willie Nelson and Ross Gannon is the Paul Newman of wooden boat building. And they both have a wonderful sort of cantankerous sensibility. They have a sort of wizardry, you know. They bring all the stories and lore and wisdom of literal, you know, seafaring, like maritime wise men. And that was one of the first things he said to me was that he was friends with Ted Danson. And I said, the good looking one? And he said, yeah, that's the one.
All right. As promised, how did you guys meet?
Well, we've met three times before fell in love on a film in 1995. But before that, we had met each other socially. The first time I met Mary, she was the star of, I'm blanking.
It's called Cross Creek.
Cross Creek.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't get the part. and I auditioned for her husband. And I remember...
You auditioned to play my husband.
Yes. And I remember it was raining and she was a little bit late to the audition. I saw her run up these stairs and then they called me into the room. And I literally remember where I sat. We disagreed with each other on whose side was I was over on that side of it. And so I remember that. And then we met at a Henry Winkler barbecue birthday party in his backyard. And, you know, just a high kind of thing. And then we met in Washington, D.C. For President Clinton's inauguration and met at some dinner. And those were the three times. And then we met on this film. And that's where the story begins, really.
Oh, wow. I love that. Yeah. That's so cool. Nick and I met in 2000 doing a little equity waiver play together in Los Angeles over on the east side of town. And we held the dubious honor of being the only two cast members who the director had passionately fought to keep from being cast in the play. So... and I, you know, we I think we remember the the moment that we actually met like so well. And yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. I'm still minding my manners.
He really is. You're doing a good job. But I think it's safe to say that we both have really unusually great marriages, maybe, seems
yes.
like.
Yes,
so what's
do.
The secret to that, one wonders?
Knock on wood.
I mean, for me, it's because I'm madly in love and because it's Mary Steenburgen. And so it's kind of easy. But to be more specific, I think you got to be madly in love. It really helps. And then,
really
you know, that,
does.
That comes and goes as far as your experience, you know,
it was,
experiencing.
It was gone about 15 minutes
ago. But, you know, fear, you know, a little fear can make it disappear for a second or two, but you know, we laugh a lot.
I would say that's a huge part of it for me.
But also, I'm interrupting.
Go ahead.
But it's like, if I could be a woman, I would be Mary. I love how she loves her being a woman. I love how she has self-esteem. I love that she doesn't need me. She may need me now because being in love, you end up, one of the things you end up doing is desperately needing each other, but only by kind of choice. She was very independent. And it's hard to describe why you love somebody, but I do.
Oh, and, that's so nice.
What else? Oh, yeah, we try to be scrupulous about telling the truth, you know, especially the ugly little teeny silly ones. So, yeah.
And I think we don't take our relationship for granted because we both had to stare down some of our own crap before we ever met each other. We were both in other marriages and other relationships, and you don't really grow from those unless you figure out what your part of that not working was. And I think we had both done a lot of that soul searching, and I think we were kind to each other. We thank each other for the littlest cup of tea or coffee in the morning or whatever. There's like a kindness that is constantly acknowledged.
Yeah,
I think. And again, not to make ourselves sound like we're perfect, because literally we did just argument before. Oh. but most of the time we're really appreciative to get to spend this life together. And for me, he's a very, it's so funny because I remember walking behind him when we were going to go do this movie together. They had asked me to fly to San Francisco and meet with he and the director and one other person. But it was, the purpose of it was to see if we had chemistry. And I kind of knew that if he could nix my being cast, because like most films, the guy was cast and it was like, let's figure out who the woman's going to be. So I hoped that we would get along, you know, and I had just gotten out of a relationship, and I'd also been up for about 48 hours finishing the movie I was doing. And I flew to San Francisco and I was so strung out and tired, but I tried to, you know, check into the hotel, splash water on my face, put on a nice dress, and we went to this restaurant to have dinner and see if we liked each other. And the first thing I really remember is that he was waiting.
Now be careful, because this is
in
important.
The bar area to greet me, which was very sweet, and that he had hair down to his shoulders, and all of it was fake. It was
little beads.
It was extensions.
They were extensions, but I was so proud of them. I loved them.
And I walked behind him as we went to our table, and I'm tall, so he struck me as quite tall because he's quite a bit taller than me. So that I'm walking behind this tall man who is tossing his fake hair back and forth proudly. And I remember literally thinking, oh my God, this is the most ridiculous creature I've ever met. That's what I remember. That's my first thought.
I did not peg you as the extensions type, Ted.
Well, it was a film. It was a film. Oh, I was doing a film.
Yeah. It was for a character.
No. Oh my God.
But I love that hair.
Yeah, he was in love with that hair, that long gone hair.
But so we do like to make each other laugh. I mean, when I hear you laugh at something I do, it's like music to my heart. One other thing, though, changing the subject, but on the same line here, there's a trust. When you realize that the person you're with is going to be willing to look at their stuff, then you are willing to look at your stuff. So there's a trust that if I am vulnerable, you are going to also be vulnerable, and you know that there's not I will reveal my part of this, and you'll go, you know, yep, you're wrong. You know, am I saying that right? I can always trust Mary to look at her side of what's going on, even when we're angry with each other, which is such a relief because some people don't do that,
right?
And then you're playing the game of, you know, trying to be honest and real and look at yourself by yourself. And that's impossible.
No, there has to be a tacit understanding that you will both be equally vulnerable.
Yes.
And, you know, you come into it with flaws and foibles and say, okay, let's do our best here, given whatever hands of cards we've been dealt.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a beautiful way that you guys both described your relationship. And I have to say that I felt like I was mentally ticking off the boxes along with you. It's really nice to hear that.
I also love to have funny hair.
Yes, that is something that you have in common, Ted and Nick. Ted, please tell the story when I really feel like I heard you tell this on a talk show. Is that crazy? You got on a plane, you had to fly to New York, and you wanted Mary to go with you, and you were so mad because she didn't want to go.
Well, I don't know. I can't remember why I was going to New York, but
you were going to go do the actor's studio.
Oh, right. Thing. Right. You know that talking to the Mr. Lipton? Was that
James Lipton.
James Lipton. And so I was going to go, and Mary and I both hoped that she could come, but she couldn't because
it was Thanksgiving.
It was Thanksgiving, and she had to be with the kids and grandkids and cook and prepare for Thanksgiving. And I got it. I understood. And so she was so sweet. She was cooking. She was literally cooking on the stove in probably a bathrobe and turned to kiss me goodbye. I'm so sorry. I can't be with you.
And it was a few days before Thanksgiving, but I was making pies and I was, brown.
But I mean, but she had pot, you know, flour on her face. She had
a brown bathrobe.
The whole deal. And I walk out the door and driven to the airport, and it was one of those days where, as a celebrity walking through the airport, was particularly there was a lot of it, and I couldn't go 5 feet without having to stop and pose or do something, and not everyone was. Anyway, I was starting to get slightly impatient and put upon. Sorry. But that was the truth. I was a little put upon by everyone taking pictures of me as I walked through the airport.
Which you're normally incredibly gracious about.
I'm normally a spectacular human being. But that particular day, I was not. And I was getting grumpier and grumpier. And when I finally got on the plane, it was like, oh, thank goodness. And I walk and I turn to the left to go to my seat. And there's somebody right by the cockpit And I think he was even in like a uniform, like of the airline, with a camera, just videotaping me as I come down the aisle. And I'm like, what the fuck? Come on. This is just way too much. And I walk by and I see some lady sitting in my seat. So I keep going and I want to get behind the guy with the cameras to give my jacket to the attendant. And he's still spinning like this close to me, like, you know, a foot away, with this stupid grin on his face, videotaping me. And I'm really miffed. And then I walk back down towards my seat, which is like 3 or 4 feet away. And this diva is with a baseball cap and dark glasses is sitting in my seat. I check my ticket and I go, you know, it's like, oh, all right, whatever. I said, you're fine. And I put my bag across, you know, leaned across her and put my bag on my seat. And
you love aisle seats.
Yes.
And she,
the diva, was sitting in my seat. So anyway, Then I go to hand my jacket. No, that's when I go to take my jacket off. And I have my cell phone in my hand and I stick it in my mouth so I can take my jacket off. And I didn't have my hands free. And it turns out, I look and it's Mary, who's the diva, sitting in my seat. And there's this great shot of me because the airline guy had been in cahoots with Mary. She'll tell her end of the story. But there's this great shot of my phone drops out of my mouth onto the floor. And it was impossible. Mary was sitting there on the plane, but that moment was impossible because I knew where she was.
Cooking.
That's crazy.
She was cooking. That's so great. How did you do that, Mary? How did you beat him there?
By the way, we had this whole thing, including all my snottiness, on film because the guy caught me. So the whole thing.
Yeah, I think Ellen showed
Ellen,
it.
Yeah.
That's probably where you saw it.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew that I wanted to go because I thought it was a big thing that he was being asked to do that, you know, with James Lipton. And I didn't want him to go by himself. But I sort of like messing with his head and surprising him. And it just amuses me to give him surprises. And so I was dressed under the bathrobe and I'd already made the pies. They were already all finished or at least what I needed to finish, I'd already finished and frozen. And, you know, it was all the Thanksgiving dinner was going to be fine. And we were in cahoots with his driver. My driver and his driver were sort of doing it so that we could get there very quickly. And then the lovely man from the airline helped me to get onto the plane without Ted actually seeing me. So
it was great.
It was really fun. And we had a great time flying to New York together. And
I love that story.
When you look at the video, I literally lean over Mary and Mary starts to laugh because she knows.
I can't believe he doesn't recognize me. I'm like 2 feet from him.
Well, and you don't believe this about me, but I have this kind of knee jerk reaction that if a woman is beautiful, I don't look directly at them. I mean, I will glance and go, oh, beautiful. It better look away.
No, I believe it. I just think it's sad.
I know it's sad, but it's true. You just, you know. So I had flashed, oh, beautiful woman, diva, sitting in my seat, dark glasses, baseball.
Why do you keep calling her a diva?
Well, because she was in my seat and she's wearing a baseball cap and dark glasses in first class. In first class. So
right.
Who does that? Who does that?
A diva. Oh, I love that. Well, Nick has successfully surprised me 2 or 3 times.
What have you done?
Well, one time was when I was doing a show on Broadway and, you know, it's another elaborate thing where he's out of town and, oh gosh, you know, how long is it going to be till you can get, because we have a 2-week rule. We've never been apart for more than 2 weeks.
Right. We have the same.
Oh, Yeah, that's the only way, I think.
Well, I mean, huge. I feel like that story is also serves as a great answer as to what makes a relationship great. It's having that that desire to, you know, to strengthen and fulfill the fellowship of two.
And you're lucky that you know that it's going to be so meaningful to the other person, because a lot of people would be like, oh, you're here? Great.
Yeah.
My, that would have been sad given all the trouble I went through.
Oh, God.
You again. Yeah. He's done that a few times for me when I was out of working, you know, like doing a show on Broadway one time, and then one time when I was in Oklahoma City visiting my mom, and a couple of other times. And then one time recently, I actually got him. He was shooting Devs in
Santa Cruz.
And I was so nervous. And I found out what time he was going to be coming back from rehearsal to his hotel room. And I like hid in the bathroom. It was like, I turned all the lights off in the room. I could have scared him to death. But he opened the door and I didn't want to scare him too bad, but it was fun. I want to do that more.
And it's great with modern technology. This is a great tip to aspiring romantics, is you can set it up so, you know, you're sincerely missing each other, and it's really hard. And when Megan was, it must have been around a holiday, because I told her that I had sent her something to Oklahoma City. So you can be on the phone with her and saying,
oh, yeah, he did that one.
Oh, I miss you. You know, I wish I was there. Anyway, have a great night.
I was on the phone with him, and I was at my friend Rhonda's house in Oklahoma City, and I was upstairs and she wasn't home, and the doorbell rang. And I was like, sorry, honey, somebody's at the door. And he's like, well, you should probably get it, right? Like, if it's a package being delivered. And I was like, I guess. And so I went down there and I'm talking, we're talking. And I went down the stairs and I go, and I open the door, and I actually kept talking to him for a second. And it took me a minute to like make the connection.
Yeah. You're right. It's like your brain goes, I know he's not here. He's on the phone.
Yeah.
And there he is. It's like there is that split second of not comprehending what you're saying.
That's so good.
My kids did that one time on Mother's Day. I was doing that movie, The Proposal, back east, and I was missing them on Mother's Day, and
I was in cahoots.
You were in cahoots, and we were at a restaurant together, and I was so happy that you were taking me out for Mother's Day, but all around us were all these tables of people with their kids, and mine called me, and I was like really trying to suck it up and not be sad that, I mean, they're adults at this point. They're adult children, by the way, when this took place. But anyway, that I wasn't with any of them, and I hung up and I walked in the door. So and they had flown all that way. So that, I mean, I think
so nice.
Anything like that where you, you know, it really is like declaring that you're important to me. I think those moments are,
I'm terrible at, because I can't keep secrets. My face, it's terrible. So then what's going on with you? Nothing. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, or it's like you want to share the glee of what you're doing with your best friend who you're trying to surprise. So it's like,
you'll never believe this clever thing I'm planning. I as we were talking about it, I think it occurred to me that I would be equally as excited to see Nick. It doesn't have to be some dire time where I really need to see him. It's just any time, like even if we're both home in Los Angeles and he is going out for the day and he has two meetings, and the second meeting gets canceled and he comes home like 2 hours earlier. I'm so excited. It's like 2 hours I didn't think I was going to have. I just, anytime. It doesn't have to be a special occasion or anything.
The key is to understand that when you're deciding to spend your life with somebody, it's important that they make you feel that way.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Well,
you guys are pretty sweet. This is not this was a great first date. So the next time, you know, we're allowed to actually go out and we go out with you, it'll be, we've broken the ice. Truly. Yes. This was a lovely conversation. Thank you.
So nice. You guys are so great.
Can I just also say that our son, Charlie McDowell, saw you recently in Philadelphia when you were touring, Nick, and saw your show and was so inspired by it on every level. He's a writer director and he just thought it was so brilliant, such a brilliant evening and so brilliantly written and executed, but he also was inspired enough to go take woodworking classes. And because of you, I have a really,
really lovely,
a lovely cutting board that I never would have had. So did quite a few other people got them that he loves for Christmas. And it was all because of you. So I think if we did this interview and I didn't say that, he would want me to tell you, because he just was so inspired by you.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's very gratifying. Thank you. And, you know, we all are lucky to get to sing the songs that occur to us. And it's really nice to hear when it brightens somebody's day. And before we wrap up, I would also like, I feel like there's a chance that our director friend, Brett Haley, may listen to this podcast, and he would be absolutely heartbroken if we didn't mention that Ted and I became friends. We met around being part of the Mike. And then was Fargo where did we meet on the?
We met on I think Fargo.
I guess so. And then so we already were pals by the time The Good Place started.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
We didn't spend, you know, deep time together. We were buddies. We were high handshake buddies. And I called Ted. We were casting this independent movie, Hearts Beat Loud. And I called Ted out of the blue and said, "Will you come to Brooklyn and play my friend and bartender for a few scenes?" And Ted said, "Yeah, sure." And I said, "Well, do you want me to send you the script or, you know?" And he said, no, sounds like fun. And he came and was so wonderful and generous. And that was, I think, the root of us becoming now good lifelong friends.
And yes, I agree, Nick, completely. And what I was amazed by, because I did not have a heavy load, but I think I was there like 2 or 3 days maybe. And I got to watch you, you know, go from, I don't know about go from, but, you know, you are a character actor. We're all character actors here, but you were embracing being the lead, you know, the romantic lead of this film. And you were so sweet and vulnerable and by the way, amazing in that film.
I love that film.
I thought you were just brilliant.
That film is lovely. People should, this is a good time for people that haven't seen it to watch it.
Really nice movie.
What that film captured, this is Brett's, you know, toot his horn a little bit, but it captured creativity being, you know, a song being made.
Mm-hmm.
You really got that creative moment of a song being created. And I thought that was amazing. But you were really wonderful in it. And yes, lifelong friends.
Well, that's nice.
Thank you. And I since we've been sitting here, I looked it up. It wasn't The Thin Red Line. It was Saving Private Ryan. But I knew I had a memory of that granite jawline in, in one of those period helmets.
So while we've been talking, you've been looking at your phone, basically.
Yeah, he's been tweeting.
I actually made a pot of goulash since we started.
Well, thank you, Ted and
much
Mary.
Love.
Mary
much
and
love
Ted.
To you.
This is so lovely. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, beauties.
Thank you so much.
It's been another episode of In Bed with Nick and Megan.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.